Chapter 24, Balancing Values. The Bible does not tell us how long Jesus remained in the land of Tyre and Sidon, but Matthew and Mark tell about his return through Decapolis and of many miracles of healing and the feeding of a multitude of 4,000 men beside the women and children which had listened to his teaching for 3 days. This multitude was fed with 7 loaves and a few small fishes, and they did all eat and were filled, and they took up broken pieces that remained over, 7 baskets full. You see how the crowd still followed Jesus, though many had turned from him because he would not become a king and ruler for their nation. The chief rulers, Pharisees and Herodians, who had been quarreling between themselves, now patched up a sort of alliance so that they might crush Jesus. Even these 2 parties, that had never seen any good in the hated but proud, aristocratic and powerful Sadducees, were now ready to join with them in this one thing of destroying Jesus. Both of these, and all parties among the rulers of the Jews, came to Jesus and demanded from him a sign from heaven. And this was after the healing of the sick, curing of lepers, giving sight to the blind, making the deaf to hear, the dumb to speak, feeding multitudes of thousands, walking on the sea, and making even the waves and the winds to obey his voice, as he said to the storm, "Peace, be still." Is there anything so dull and so stupid as the spiritual side of human nature? Many clung to Jesus, though many turned away from him. His life was in the midst of disturbances, jealousies, prejudices, and distrust, but he never ceased going about doing good. Is it not queer when we think how we go right against a great wall, when we find ourselves in such a crowd, and we declare we cannot go forward another inch in the midst of such wrangling? The difference between Jesus and us is he was above it, and we are not only in it, but of it. In the autumn months, Jesus again went away from the fault finders and off again among the heathen of Decapolis. If he had lived in this age, he might have made the same choice for a place of residence. What do you think about it? The people were talking about the great work Jesus was doing, and the common people, who were not afraid they might lose office, who had no rascality to hide, the common people loved him and heard him gladly. Not a day passed, but everywhere in the whole country, people, when they met in the marketplaces, the synagogues, or in the corridors of the temple, asked each other, "What new miracle has been performed by the Rabbi Jesus? Have you heard of the miracles the great teacher performed a few days ago?" Then the scribes and priests complained because Jesus drew the people away from the sacrifices, and that meant less money for them. And oh, he ate with publicans and sinners. He did not think there was need of keeping their 613 laws. He was not careful about washing his hands after he had touched a sinner. He talked with Gentiles and even Samaritans, and worse than that, he entered their homes. He preached a new law that was not of Moses, and told the people to love their neighbors and to forgive their enemies. Worst of all, he loved Galilee more than Jerusalem. If we allow him to lead men as he is now leading them, why, the worship at the temple will end and the people will offer no more sacrifices, said Caiaphas, the high priest. Yes, he will. He is drawing all men to himself, and for the sake of the worship at the temple, we must silence him, said others of the priests and rulers. Then they put their heads together and asked in whispers, "How can we do it?" The envy of the priests became so great that Jesus kept as far from them as he could, just as you would do. Often during this time, when he performed a miracle, he would ask the one healed not to say anything about it. After feeding the 4,000 and performing other miracles, Jesus took his disciples and went up into Caesarea Philippi. where after a season of going away from everyone and getting strength and courage through prayer and communion with God, he tried again to make plain to his disciples what was the work he came to do, and what would be the result to himself of his efforts, and what sort of a reward would come to those who took up the work he was going to leave for them to do. With all his mind and heart, Jesus tried to teach his disciples the lessons of balancing values. Using the language of today, and using it reverently, he wanted everyone to give his soul a square deal as in the sight of God. The disciples had come up to the base of Mount Hermon that went up above them 9,000 feet. It was only about 25 miles northeast of the Sea of Galilee and was a beautiful country. The crucifixion was not much more than half a year away. Jesus saw the awful shadows, and he was anxious to teach his disciples about the work they must do and prepare them for what was coming. It had not dawned on their minds that the way to the crown was by way of the cross, not only for the Messiah, but also for all his disciples. To lead up to this thought, Jesus began the questioning of his class. Perhaps late some afternoon, as they sat on the ground around him in the shade of one of the magnificent trees in that country. Matthew, Mark, and Luke each tell the story about this examination of the disciples. Luke tells a very little more than Mark, but Matthew tells almost as much again. Did you know that Mark's brief graphic style just suited the Romans for whom he wrote his gospel? Those Romans were warriors and doers of the ancient world, and Peter helped Mark to write in a way that would suit that class of people. We will take Mark's form of the way Jesus asked the first question. Who do men say that I am? No one can actually know why Jesus cared to ask that question, but if this is a class of 12 up for examination, you have a very fair idea of why the question was asked. If Jesus was instructing by the question method, he seems to have chosen a very pointed question that would lead quickly to a climax in the lesson. Peter was so impulsive that, of course, he answered first. Now, if after 2.5 years, Peter has a right opinion, has true values, he has learned something worthwhile. Hear Peter's answer. Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. Thou art the Messiah. Thou art the very one for whom all Jews have been waiting to come to be the Savior of all the world. How glad this quick response made the heart of Jesus, who replied, Blessed art thou, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed it unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I also say unto thee that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it, and I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Oh, how elated Peter was at so much praise! He took it all as personal praise, just as we might have done. But only a few minutes later, when he actually rebuked his master, Jesus turned and, before the whole class, said to Peter, Get thee behind me, Satan. Thou art a stumbling block unto me, for thou mindest not the things that be of God, but the things of men. Poor Peter, how humiliated he must have been. Solomon told him years ago just how it would be that a haughty spirit goes before a fall. But are you not glad that Christ told Peter that the world had use for rock Christians? That is the kind that understands the worth of balancing values. That is the kind that have the keys that not only unlock God's treasure house of spiritual blessings, but unlock nature's great storehouse that has numberless doors. And do you know that every one of those doors are worth entering? If you want real bliss in this world, you want to use the keys of knowledge which hang up before you. There is one thing which boys and girls often miss when looking at those keys of knowledge. They are eager to know, and they think that schools and schoolmasters textbooks and leisure to study them will give the knowledge most worthwhile. That is a mistake. They have not yet learned the lesson of balancing values. God's gift of the keys means to each an open door to knowledge. But what use is the open door without the power to enter and learn? Jesus showed the disciples what a complete confession meant. Oh, how hard it all seemed to them. Can you see their faces as he went on telling them that, "If any man come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whosoever would save his life shall lose it, and whosoever shall lose his life for my sake shall find it." Does that seem a paradox? Try for one day to think only of number one and to be just as greedy as you can for number one all one whole long day. Then try one day to lose all thought of number one and, for Jesus' sake, be greedy to get happiness for number two during one short blissful day. And you will know exactly what Jesus meant when he said, "If you would lose your life for his sake, you would find it."